thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing, all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Okay. We are back, and Rich Migliori standing by in the background as we come away from a terrific visit with Steve Asmussen and Richie. You've been involved in one way or another. Rich Migliori has been involved in I don't know how many Travers days.
Oh gosh, I mean I go back. My first summer up there, galloping horses. I watched Temperance Hill win with Eddie Maple. I actually got there for Affirmed and Aladar on a horse van the summer before. I didn't stay there the whole summer, but God, I mean, it's part of my life. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
So it's like 50, like close to 50.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, maybe more. Yep.
Unbelievable. Well, that I'm going to go out on a limb. That's got to be a top five Travers Day.
Oh, this was tremendous. I mean, the whole day of racing was fantastic. You know, the horses delivered. The crowd is always incredible. I mean, there's nothing like the fans in Saratoga. It really, you know, I got off air and I was watching the sword dancer in my office and I was listening to the crowd from the office. And it just struck me, you know, the enthusiasm and the love of the game. And we were on set. Michelle, you made a really good point. Like, there's a lot of big race days where, you know, people are there because it's an event. But she said, look around. And I started looking around. Everybody had their head buried in a racing form, in a program. They you know, doping out the races. Like they it's like a whole other level. It's like they are such fans and aficionados of the game, if you will. I really got a kick out of when she pointed that out. And it was so true that everybody's into the races. It's not just because it's an event. I mean, sure, it's an event, but it's that they really look forward to, you know, the big races and the big horses, and the horses certainly delivered.
It was so much fun. It was so comfortable. And in fact, waiting for the Travers when the horses were coming onto the track, and Elise Jacobs was next to me, and we were talking, who do you like? Who, you know, and I picked Cyberknife. She said, oh, that's an interesting pick. And we were going back and forth. And I said, and she was all relaxed. I mean, it's so tough for the job that Elise and Daisy, they're having to take care of, you know, so many people for a day like Travers. And all the tension usually involved, and she was. I said, "You're relaxed as can be." She goes, "Oh, it's gone great. It's been just perfect." And look at this day. It was like sunny and warm, but cool and comfortable. I mean, it just was an idyllic day. And everywhere you, what you just said, Rich. I mean, about the people and the. I noted in the opening the wide array of race goer, and you're sort of having your ear craned. You know, some people that you hear conversation and you can tell they're really, you know, they're really knowledgeable. Then there's people that it might be their first day. I was with Johnny D and Will Schwartz and Will Sun Drew, and we heard somebody say they're getting in the gate. I think for the personal ensign, and somebody said, "Is this the epicenter race?" So it's right. It's the whole gamut, and you know, you had young people in droves. It just makes you feel so good about the game and about being involved, and it throws in the face of all the you know, the negativity and those that want to run the game down. It can't be this way 365 because that's not practical or possible. But a day like this just makes you realize how vibrant the game is, and that there's a future no matter what anybody says.
Well, that's for sure. And you know me, I'm anti-negative. I can't stand when, you know, people, you know, just find something to pick at and make it a sore. You know, I was going back through some stuff, and I was reading some old newspaper articles, and it's kind of been that way throughout the history of the game, where you know, the negativity. You know, I was reading an article, and it was like, because there had been an incident, you know, there was an accident, three horses fell, you know, jockey had clipped heels, and how they were calling for the banning of the game, and it was like from 1959 or something, you know, like it's just amazing over the time.
Yep.
And then, you know what, but here's the thing that I think we all got to remember. 99% of the time, it's people that have no knowledge of our game, don't want to know anything about our game. They have an agenda. They you know, someone told them once there was something, and they've never bothered to do the work or the research or really look into it. I, you know, one of the tours, I had a woman, you know, the history tours that we were doing for TRF all summer, and I could see how she was convinced that this wasn't right, that this, the game, everybody else in her group was into it, and she was like, I think this is wrong, this is cool, they shouldn't be installed. And by the time we got done in the morning, Steve, and I showed her that, you know, you would be thrilled to be treated as well as these horses, I said, the dentist makes a house call. The doctor makes a house call. They've got a personal valet that turns down their bed twice a day. And by the way, probably puts a mint on their pillow, okay? They've got a personal masseuse. They've got a chiropractor. They've got, you know, just by the time we got done, I could see she was like, wow, this is different than I thought it was. But she came in with the whole idea that this is, the game is terrible. Like, I don't even know why she was on the tour to begin with. And it turns out I was glad she was, because I feel like maybe I had an opportunity to change somebody's mind.
Ron, before we break camp, maybe you heard him when he talked about it. Ron Moquette had a very similar circumstance on no less of a day than like either Rebel Day or maybe even Arkansas Derby Day. It was a big day, and yet he absolutely set aside things and spent a good portion of the day with a woman that had essentially, you know, come to protest the racetrack and the whole concept, and he, you know, he utterly had changed her outlook, and I'm glad you went in that direction. Let's turn our attention to the results on the Oval, and I've got to start with Travers, obviously. Rich, just had a really fun visit with Steve Asmussen, and it is something. Somebody wrote on Twitter to me, they said, it's amazing to watch a horse develop and change and grow and mature right before your eyes, and you know, what was originally a you know, somewhat headstrong and go front runner has been refashioned into a responsive tactical weapon. And as much as we expected a division leader out of Saturday, what we got now is a Breeders' Cup Classic win candidate.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, we were talking on air and it was brought up yesterday, you know, recapping the day. Well, you know, how would he fare against the likes of Flightline and Life is Good? And my take on it is if they both show up, it helps him because their styles conflict. They're both very fast. And if they both make it to the Classic, which we hope they do, I like... his name's escaping me. Epicenter, even better. I just think that then he'll be sitting, you know, waiting and coming to make a run. So, but we've kind of seen this movie before, haven't we? I'm thinking Gunrunner, like the way he continued to improve and develop and get better. And this horse feels like, in some respects, he has more natural talent. You know, he was very unlucky throughout the Triple Crown. You know, he very much should have come away with at least one of the two. I mean, he, you know, you, if you look back at the Derby, I mean, and this is not to take anything away from Rich Strike, because he ran that day, and I thought he ran well in the Traverse. He showed that, you know, it was not just a pure fluke. He had a move a little prematurely. I mean, in a big field, and that's not any kind of a knock on Joel Rosario at all. I mean, you've got to take the opportunities as they present themselves. But, you know, he moved a little earlier than you might like. And again, circumstances dictated it. He worked out a very good trip. But for as fast as they were going, you know, maybe if he had been able to lay a little bit more in wait, he would have gotten it done. And then his Preakness, you know, he just, to me, he didn't break that day. He slipped behind. It looked like he lost his footing. So he didn't get the position he wanted. I thought Joel delivered a brilliant ride after that, but it definitely left him a little more to do than maybe you would have liked. And then it was an absolutely perfect trip in the Traverse. I mean, the way he slid into that pocket slot into the first turn, and Joel was like such a long, light rein. It was beautiful to watch. And you knew that he, the way he was traveling, he was a winner every step of the way. And he's in, you know, to me, I don't see how anybody can unseat him for three-year-old championship now. I guess maybe if someone went on and won the Classic or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't see it. But you know, the prospects of this horse going forward, because one thing about Steve Asmussen, he gets a horse prepared for what the next challenge in front of him. You know, he didn't have him to be his best on Jim Dandy Day. He's good enough to win the Jim Dandy, but to move forward to the Travers, and that's why his horses hold a form cycle so long and so well. And I'm just seeing a horse that just continually, you know, I was talking with Tom Amos yesterday. He said, you know, he's always been a big, strong horse, but mentally he's seen so much growth, and he watched him train all winter. To me, I always realize he's a big, strong horse, but he even looks like he's developed physically as well as mentally, that he's taken that to another level. So, fantastic. It was just a fantastic performance and very satisfying result that, you know, the best horse won. And I was with you with Cyberknife. I mean, I wound up, you know, hitting that exacta really well. I thought it was the two of them. That was the race. And he was very, very game. I mean, he had every right to cough it up for second. And you know, he would not be passed. He just second best to a very good horse.
I spent a couple of minutes, even before Steve came on, touching on how remarkable it was, especially when you look at the chart and, you know, you see Ain't Life Grand and early voting eased, and they're attending the pace that was set by Cyberknife. How he held second is unbelievable.
No, it really is. I mean, and you could see he did not want to get past. You know, it was interesting going to the lead, right? You know, he's been kind of been more in a stalking spot. But when you get horses that have a tendency to wait on other horses, pull up a little bit, I used to love to put those kind of horses on the lead, Steve, because then they would kind of rate themselves along. You know, they would like, okay, you know, I'm doing enough. But then when they feel pressure, they pick it up again. And then that's what he did when he felt horses there. Again, second best to a very good horse. But his tenacity, it was just a tremendous effort from him. The winner, the whole day. I mean, Gufo, who, you know, I go back and forth with him because you know he's got so much ability. But then which Gufo is going to show up? You know, sometimes he gets keen, sometimes he leaves himself too much to do. And then I was talking with Paul LaDuca, and the way he kept talking about it and the way he explained some things, and this is what's so fun to work with good people. He kind of talked me, he made me say, like, man, this horse, I really like him. And that was another ticket I cashed on the day, like, and you know, hooked him up in multis. Like, it was like one of my best days gambling, but also as a fan, it was just a wonderful day.
Well, having it be a good day gambling goes a long way. That's funny. You touched on a few things here, too. I mean, just in terms of Joel and, you know, what was amazing to me watching, and you expect this from Rosario, he, with all the carrying on and discussion we've had about crop use, Rich, here's a guy who just almost never needs to use a crop and does everything with hands and heels. And I just, it was unbelievable. I mean, and to have a horse power away when he was easing up, Joel was. That, to me, was really stunning. I mean, here are the closers coming, Zandon and Rich Strike, and he outclosed the closers. This after having made a 3/8 blitzkrieg to reach contention and then eventually take over after Cyberknife just could not stay with him. It really was something to watch.
It was, but that's one of his strengths as a rider. He gets horses so balanced, running into his hands so beautifully. And that, you know, that was all on full display there. And he's got a feel with the horse. You know, it's interesting because there are times, you know, we've talked about it, that I get frustrated. Like, I go, man, what was he doing there? But he's such an instinctual rider. He's not a guy that's going to go out there with a specific, you know, set game plan. He's kind of always reacting to how his horse is traveling underneath him, how he's feeling, you know, the pace. He, I'm sure there's times, because Steve's a guy that, you know, he wants things a certain way. I'm sure he must get frustrated, but you can't handcuff a rider like Joel. You have to let him be Joel. You know, I had this conversation one day with Christophe, who trains Gufo. You can't tell him, you can't give him instructions, because he's a guy that just rides in the moment, and it's all by feel and touch. And that's why he's able to get in those rhythm, that beautiful rhythm with a horse, and that's why his hand ride is so effective and keeping a horse balanced. Really, I mean, he's remarkable to watch. You know, I heard different things about Jackie's Warrior, and you know, he kind of bobbled, and if you watch closely, he's allowing him to run free. I mean, the reins were popping him on the neck, and seriously, he should have went faster the first quarter. I just don't think that was the Jackie's Warrior's A game. I just don't think he was 100% himself that day. The middle of the race heated up. He did what he needed to do. He kicked away, and before he could even see Cody's Wish coming, you saw that's when he went to the crop. Why did he go to the crop there? Because he realized, wow, I'm not getting the response I normally get from this horse. And that's what the crop is there for. That's an aid. It's not a punishment.
Yeah, on that, and let's slide to some of the other results from Saturday, and that's a good place to go. I mean, how much of it is the 7/8 and the difference between, you know, running essentially full out for 7 furlongs or for 6 furlongs versus that 7th. Steve specifically credited Cody's Wish, and he brought up a very germane point. I mean, Cody's Wish came home in 35 seconds, Rich.
Yeah.
I think we got to go look at a bunch of charts to find somebody that did that in recent memory. I mean, to come home in a tick under 35 seconds.
Yeah, no, he ran. You know, I think sometimes, you know, because the horse is such a short price favorite and there's some disappointment that they didn't get it done, you know, I was just doing it, right? Tend to overlook the effort of the winner, which is a mistake. And he ran big. I still feel, though, to my eye, me watching the race, he just seemed to me a touch flat. That's my opinion, but the winner was very good, and he finished, he ran. They're not machines. They're flesh and blood, and they're better on some days than others, and I just think that he ran a race, he ran a good race, but I don't think he ran a day race.
Well, all it does is make things even that much more interesting looking ahead to the Breeders' Cup Sprint, which has been a division that seemingly was a little bereft. And we should mention, Laurel River ran great, the Judmont, to win the Pat O'Brien for Baffert and Juan Hernandez. So there's a West Coast salvo as well. And it's funny, it looked like at some point, like American, the Papa Padromo was going to get, was kind of coming to Laurel River, but flattened out. And so there's one to, add to the Breeders' Cup Sprint prospects. Rich, you mentioned Guffo. Before we talk Jack Christopher and everything else, and the distaff, the personal ensign, let me get some Guffo thoughts. This was an interesting race, and you talk about gambling. I made the reference that I've rarely seen a race result where virtually everybody I ran into for the next couple of hours, and then on Sunday, said I needed Mira Mission, and I didn't run into one person who said, "Oh, I loved Guffo." We all were on Mira Mission somehow.
Well, that's so funny because of Carmella, I wound up hitting that exacta, and Paul. Paul kept touting Guffo to me, but I used the two of them. I'm not like a big bettor. It was nothing I've ever really done. When I was riding at it, and I've gotten more into it. I mean, I feel like it's your responsibility if you're saying you like specific horses, right? Whether the way they're warming up or something you saw in a previous race, a trip, or the way you handicap, I feel the right thing is I've got to put my money up as well. Whether it's a $10 bet, I've got to back the horses that I'm, saying on TV that I like. I think it's irresponsible not to. So, but for me to have like a day like that, again, admittedly, I'm not a big, bettor, but I was involved. I was invested, and it really kind of made it even more interesting for me. I mean, I just had so much fun just hanging around. And then I live 100 yards from the paddock. People were tailgating in that field, like right across near the Clark Barn. I left the track after Travers. It took me 3 hours to get home. Hey, I was stopping at everybody's tailgate. Have a glass of wine. Hang out with us. It was great. It was as good a day as I can remember at the races that I wasn't riding.
No, very much so. Looking at the rest of that field too, Soldier Rising came running from the back of the pack to be third. So Christophe with first and third, and Otter Bend, of course, owns Guffo, and you got the partners Morris Bailey and Mike Dubb and Matticat, all Mike Caruso, all involved in Soldier Rising. But that was a sneaky good effort by him too, because I thought he was pretty much mired. Broom, I guess I got to go watch the replay again because they really at no point did Broom look like he was, going to reach contention.
No, I got to go back and watch that replay again, and that's something we talk about. It's just so important with turf racing to go back and watch the replay multiple times. You have to watch it at least as many times as there's horses in the race, and then usually more than that. I really kind of lost him in the fray, and I was kind of looking forward to seeing how he would compete. But basically, he seems like a no-show. But again, I to be fair, I've got to watch the replay again.
I hear you. Those are the stories. I mean, then the rest of the usual suspects to some degree. Channel Maker folded up shop kind of uncharacteristically.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to his owner talk about what might be in his future. Maybe steeplechase or eventually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's funny. The first thing I think of, the way he runs, as high headed as he runs, you're gonna have to teach him to drop his head if he's gonna see them fences coming. You know what I mean? Like, he's a horse that's usually his head's up in the rider's face, and horses jump clean when they paying attention to what's in front of them, and he's a horse that's definitely a stargazer. You know, he's got his head up in the air and not, I don't want to say not paying attention. He just runs with a way that I wouldn't want to jump him over a fence with his head up in the air.
Well, so wait a minute. So that's actually a great that's a great counterpoint to the opposite, a stargazer versus a daisy cutter.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. You know, listen, it's effective for him. He runs. I mean, you can't knock success, right? But you know, it's unusual to see a horse run with his head that high in the air and be as effective as he's been throughout his career.
Let's get to the fillies and mares. And Letruska was trying to, like Gaffoe and like Art Collector at Charlestown Friday night, there were so many horses trying to win again. CC on Sunday in the Ballerina. Give a thought to Letruska's effort, which I imagine Gutierrez is happy with. You knew where she was going to be. And, of course, Clairiere problems, coming out of the gate, rocking in the gate, and so forth, and cutting her tongue. Steve says she's fine and shouldn't miss any training even. But, search results, I thought search results was going to follow up the Molly Pitcher try, and she did. They were both search results and Letruska were more or less sitting ducks for an oncoming Malathat. Todd said to Rich that, you know, she was off, she was listless, she was just wrong, last time, and so regroup, and here she was, and there she goes.
Well, it's funny, because I had been waiting forever for them to put blinkers on her. I just watch her run. She was always, what I call a bicycle horse, right? If you weren't kind of pedaling, reminding her, she wasn't taking you. I used to get tired watching Johnny Ryder because it was like, man, she would never give any indication of how much horse he had underneath him. You know, she'd look like she was all in from a long way out, and then obviously she wasn't because she'd keep coming. And then she gets the blinkers, and you didn't get the kind of the performance I thought you might get. But then you hear that she came out of it, she wasn't right, she didn't act right. So I was fully on board about, if she's right, I'm still believing the blinkers are going to make her a better filly, and it absolutely did. And Johnny delivered, an absolutely picture-perfect ride. And I'm so impressed with him and for so many reasons. The obviously 1,000 wins in Saratoga, what his career has been. But if you watch him ride, the first thing that really starts to go on a rider is their legs. Before their, actually first their customers, then their legs. And his legs are still rock solid. Like, you don't see any erosion of his leg strength. And to me, that's the first thing that you start to see. And guys can compensate, and they're able to do it and work through it. And because of their experience, they can, get by. You get better from a mental standpoint as you diminish from a physical standpoint, right? And I always talk about the window that a rider has, what would be their prime, when they're at their height physically and their height mentally, before they, start getting chewed up with injuries and different things. For me, Jerry Bailey's prime, that window was open longer for him than any other rider I could ever remember. Now, he took really good care of himself, and he was very fortunate. He went a long time without an injury, and that's, part and parcel with it. Johnny's had some bad injuries. He's able to come back with the same enthusiasm, the same, determination, and I always wonder about what's the motivation for a guy who's basically done everything. Like sometimes I'd be coming back from an injury, and people might question, why do you keep going back to the well? Well, there were things I hadn't accomplished that, I still wanted or, thought I could get done. So there was always a high level of motivation. For a guy that's basically done it all, Johnny still rides with that hunger, that determination. And I marvel at it. I think it's phenomenal. But Marathat was terrific. The whole day delivered. We saw it from the first race to the last race was fantastic.
On that topic, on Johnny, and of course you go back to the horse that fell after the wire and. You know, when he was badly injured and he had the spleen issue it was a mess. Caitlin, yeah, it was, oh my gosh, what was that horse's name? It's like a three-word name, like something.
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a Todd Pletcher horse.
A stake horse. It was,
you know, and honestly, he got lucky that day, Steve, that the ground was soft. I mean, you know, the horse rolled right over top of him. And if there wasn't some give in the ground, you don't know what the end result might be. I mean, as bad as it was, it could have been worse. And listen, when Johnny first came around, I'm sorry.
No, finish. I'll come back with
that. When Johnny first came around, you know, I always liked Johnny. We got along really well. But And Johnny will admit this himself, tendency to complain a bit, you know, if something didn't go well in a race. Like, there's guys in the room that always that are, you know, they're gonna I don't want to say cry, but they're going to complain more than other guys, you know. And Johnny was one of them guys, right? And yeah, you know, he'd win a race and come back and be complaining about something. And I would go like, man, you know, I actually questioned if he had to overcome adversity, how he would stand up to that. Because if you're complaining when it's good, you know, what are you going to do when the going gets tough, you know? And I was 100% wrong about it. I told him this. I questioned if he would be the kind of guy to be able to come back from a bad injury because, you know, of that attitude at times. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Again, all my respect, and I'm saying this to compliment him, and it's funny, even like with the tribute they did after his 1,000th win, even Shook said, well, he can be opinionated. And Johnny made a joke about it. You know, Johnny's not afraid to be vocal about, you know, even if a horse won, well, I didn't like the way he did it. He was doing this. He was getting out. He was pulling up, whatever it might be, you know. But, I mean, obviously, I mean, the guy's proven it over and over again, not just coming back from bad injuries, just the way he's dealt with everything and being an advocate for his fellow riders. And I thought it was really cool that Leona got to, you know, lead him into the winner's circle. That was a pretty neat moment. I got a kick out of that. And I got to be honest with you, I completely missed something. I got to see Leo on Friday when they did the little tribute to all the New York breds and, you know, Arnold Four-Star Dave. I hadn't realized until like 3 or 4 days before that Leo's wife, Leona's mom, Joan, had passed. I don't know how I missed that. So when I, you know, found out it was, I had an opportunity to express, you know, my condolences and how sorry I was, I don't know how that one got by me.
I had not heard that either, actually, Rich, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I, not to pile on with some sadness, but I also, over the weekend, came to understand that Rudy Del Judas had a horse fall on him in Ocala and is in bad shape, very bad shape.
I'm really sorry to hear that. That's a guy that, you know, I rode with, obviously tremendous horseman. That's too bad, but... Yeah, no, listen, there's times in this game you don't get along with certain people or, you know, there's, you know, it's like a big dysfunctional family at times, but, you know, we're still a family, you know, and it's so important that, you know, people know how much you mean to them. You know, it's easy to let that stuff get by.
Rich, a couple of other thoughts. Speaking of gatherings in the winner's circle to hand out trophies and honor you know, a all-time great, the Alan Jerkins, and in fact, you were when we were talking about renaming the race from the King's Bishop. You rightly said, "Well, at least they renamed it from a horse that the guy trained." That made perfect sense. There was some harmony there. Jack Christopher coming through, and this was one of those, you know, things where you felt if he ran his race and he had already established his one-turn prowess, you knew he was going to be tough to beat, but you still have to come through.
Yeah, and, you know, there's always a question when a horse is going to turn back in distance, is all that speed, going to be intact? Is it all going to... And it was. I mean, he's just a very, very good horse that, they tried him. He earned his right to try to go further. He obviously is a one-turn horse. He's more than proficient, at a mile. So, they're going to play to his strength. And that's what your best trainers do. They go back to a horse's strength. Put them in a position to succeed, not fail. It always frustrates me. I've got some friends that train horses, and I'll get frustrated with them at times, that they're trying to make the horse do something that the horse maybe not really suited to do. And my contention is every racehorse has only so many A efforts in them. Your best trainers win races with horses with their B and C efforts because they can only go to that A effort so many times. Obviously, your better horses have more of those A efforts. So if you're running a horse in a race that they are just not good enough to win and they can run their A effort and finish fourth, you've just wasted one of those A efforts and put that horse in a position to try harder to not be able to win. And I think horses stay sounder when they can win with their B and C efforts, not have to go so far into themselves to pull it out. They tried the Haskell. All right, this isn't it. Let's go back 7/8. We know what he's really good at. He was scintillating. I really enjoyed watching Jose Ortiz warm him up. He knew that coming off the mile and eighth race, he wanted him sharp and in the bridle, and he gave that horse as vigorous a warm-up as you're going to see. And I'm a guy who believes in warm-ups. I really have a hard time when I see somebody jog a horse to the gate. I just don't think it's right for the horse. You've got to get their blood pumping. You've got to get their airway open. You've got to get their muscles limbered. You wouldn't see a boxer come out of the dressing room without a good sweat on and ready to compete. The bell rings, whether it's the starting gate or in the boxing ring, and you better be ready to jump out of there. So I thought that was interesting to watch. These are little things that I always watch that I find intriguing. I look at the game a little bit different because I was fortunate to be out there and compete. But it really annoys me when a guy doesn't warm a horse up.
Yeah, we've had that. That's the famous get away from the pony. Got to leave the pony.
go get him a good gallop. It's important. Like I said, I believe in it.
Rich, always, speaking of ready to answer the bell, Rich Migliori, always ready to answer the bell, and we've got a week. It's hard to believe. You always get to this juncture, and you say to yourself, it's not possible that we got six cards left, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, but let's live in the moment. It's a beautiful time of year. We're getting with it. Mornings are a little cooler and nicer, and enjoy the last week. I came home last night. I was on till 6:30, and usually it takes me less than 2 hours. And there was an accident up towards the top of the Taconic, and I wound up having to go down Route 9. I didn't get in the house till about 9:30 last night, which is very unusual from Saratoga. But can't wait to get back Wednesday. Got another tour on Thursday. From what I understand, they got good money for me cooking dinner next year. And I agreed to do a second one with the people who back
good.
The top bit.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I love it.
But hopefully I get to see you. I really haven't seen you the whole summer.
No, that's true, actually. All right, we'll carve out. We'll get a carve out then. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you like in passing, but it's just like, hey, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but all right, listen, great. Always great talking with you. I'll catch up with you later in the week.
Rich Migliori, everybody, MIG 4450, and the Travers Day recapping. We're going to stay right here and one more visit before the top of the hour when Johnny D rolls in, and Johnny's rolling home, in fact, from Saratoga with Will, and I don't know if Drew got up there separately, but Will and Johnny, this is a traditional one of the traditional phone calls. They might be a little further, actually, than usual, because usually Johnny with the 10 o'clock slot, but 11 o'clock for Johnny. Chris Clement is going to join us next, and I've been actually overdue. There's been some other. I've reached for Chris a couple of times over the last over the last maybe 6 or 8 weeks. There were a couple of other spots, and we just could not. We wanted to get him on TV actually yesterday. And again, if go to Capital OTB's YouTube page, and you can always watch Loose on the Lead on. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter. It's you don't have to be in the Capital District. Ron Winchell yesterday was really terrific, and then a very poignant, which you could have expected, visit with Sean Clancy, and Sean's still in a very, I don't want to say melancholy. If melancholy is the right word, but still, still very much affected by the circumstance around the historic barn on that burnt on their property. And if you haven't read Sean's series of, he basically had to write a column almost every day because it happened, right between Whitney and Sale Week, and so the paper, and Sean prides himself. We're going to talk about this probably Wednesday, in person. But you can get a preview of it. I mean, he has written, I didn't realize this, Sean Clancy has written that column, the cup of coffee column. He has written that column for every single edition of the special. He's never missed a column, which is quite something, actually, to be honest. Really an amazing, that's an amazing run. And apparently, as he told us, if you were watching, there was some real uncertainty about it. His brother knows how to steer Sean in those kinds of circumstances. And he said, he called Joe and said, I don't think I can do it. And Joe just sort of soaked it in, and sure enough, by the time they were done, Sean said, "All right, I'm here. Let me get to work." So we had I'm not going to say like they do when a TV series is about to jump the shark on a very special Loose on the Lead. Yeah, I'm not doing that. But after everybody left, after Sean and Ron Winchell left, Seth and I kind of looked at each other and said, that's what you want after Travers, And we got one more, Loose on the Lead, one more edition next Sunday. Let me also tell you, one more edition of Beat Bic, and let's go through the numbers, and I'm looking at them for the first time. You got three more races next Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Labor Day. Three more opportunities to qualify for the September 17th final, a chance to get to Vegas. And there were 325 winners that picked Epicenter. I went Cyberknife. 325 winners out of 721 entries, which is quite something, actually. And then on Sunday in the Ballerina, 755 entries, 91 winners that found Goodnight Olive. She was my second choice, but made CC. So far, 943 qualifiers. So we'll probably end up maybe around 1,100. So it'll be a very nice field. About 1,100 maybe, 1,200 for the final. To get to Vegas, and you're not only are you eligible to win in Vegas for $700,000 plus $1 million bonus to the Beat Vic qualifier. You can't beat Gufo on Sword Dancer Saturday. a repeat winner, and Christophe Clement joins us right now to be congratulated. Chris, well done.
Thank you so much. Thanks, my brother.
You were so funny. You were so funny post race with the media, and you know, talking about getting him back to the winner's circle. And when it comes to turf distance horses, and you've had so much success with this type, there's always circumstances. There's the ground. There's the distance. There's the pace. Talk about Gufo and Saturday.
He's been a very good horse for the last 3 years. He won the grade one as a 3-year-old. He won the grade one as a 4-year-old. He's now 5-year-old. I mean, he's been, running at the top level for the last 3 years. And he's a little bit different than most horses in a way that he's not consistent through the year. He starts the year as very willing and he trains very well. And as the year goes on, he becomes lazy, which is the reason why I used a pair of blinkers on him last year. But then on the last 3 weeks before the Breeders' Cup, he became a lot more anxious than normal. And I probably should have taken the blinkers off. And I didn't at the time, which was a mistake. And on Breeders' Cup Day last year, the 4, I just thought he was not settled and he was just too high mentally. I trained him over the winter without blinkers. He trained well and he trained very willingly. He ran a really good race first come back at Gulfstream without the blinkers. He ran okay in the Man of War, just got beat at Belmont. He ran just okay in the Manhattan where he became a bit lazy. And he ran awful in Mammoth, where he was like 17 lengths out of it, and still finished very well. So even blinkers and no blinkers, he's a very willing kind of horse. He's just, without the blinkers, he just sometimes becomes very lazy in the first part of the race. And we put the blinkers back on him, and he ran a very good race in the Swap Dancer, which was great, because I just thought it's a wonderful race to win twice in a row.
No doubt about it. And, I'd forgotten about the Belmont Derby, if you go back 2 years to his 3-year-old season. So a grade one winner at 3, 4, and 5. And the declaration of war son out of the Pechonville mare. And Rosario folds into this. Brilliant ride by him. He's been associated with him now, really, the last 2 years. This was—I don't know why there were so many people, Chris, that ended up surprised. I mean, including me. I don't know why I kind of glossed over him going into this race.
He's a really good horse. He's a really good horse. Sometimes I just think we just blame the trainer whenever he runs below form. But the horse himself, if you look at his race record, he's always there. He's always in the first ring. Tries hard, and he's a fun horse to be around.
Chris, what's interesting, and I'm only looking at the last, 12 races. Belmont Derby is the last race on the set of PPs I'm looking at. He had gone through a period where he did get a good turf course 3 times, and I guess he did win he won the Grand Couturier on a good course. I was going to wonder what the good turf might have affected him, less than firm turf.
I think he's, when he won a Gulfstream for summer this year, it was very impressive. He had an electric turn of foot, and it was very firm. And to tell you the truth, he's like the real good one. He cannot run on any kind of golf. Joe Ponti was the same. Whenever they get to a certain level, some of them, that is better than some others. And I don't think, obviously, when it's tough, maybe it goes more against some other one than him. So maybe you think it's an advantage. But the truth of the matter is he can run well on any kind of ground.
It feels that way. And so now here we are, back where you were a year ago. You then ran him at Belmont in the Joe Hirsch, and then the Breeders' Cup, which, pretty much it was a disaster. Some thoughts about the fall?
No, correct. I think I'll have to speak to Mr. Kennedy on that, but most probably the plan would be to run him, you know, in a New York race called the Joe Hirschwood, which used to be like the Turf Classic before. It makes sense. The timing works out. It's the right race for the horse, and we could go there. And then we can train him for the Breeders' Cup. We don't have to do the Breeders' Cup. You know, I mean, we should only do the Breeders' Cup three in the first three. If the horse would do Kingland, I can run him somewhere else in the Breeders' Cup. You know, he's invited after winning the Scott Dancer, that invites you also for the Japan Cup. So that would be another alternative for the horse. You know, I don't know. Just at the moment, why don't we just go one race at a time and we'll see what happens.
Well, Gaffo, with a repeat in the Sword Dancer and opportunities ahead for the fall, we can't ask about anything else until we also note Soldier Rising, who was well back, Chris, and he came running as well from the back of the pack and made up a lot of ground and was only beaten a length for everything. He ran great.
No, I agree. I've always liked that though. I thought, you know, last year, same story, he went in two grade one, he got beaten two of these derby things, but by very good horses. The horse who beat us in Saratoga came back and won the Melbourne Cup for Joseph O'Brien, and the horse who beat us in Balmain, Cookie Club Gold, whatever it's called, came back and he won the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, he's really, really a tough class horse. It took me a while to get him going this year, but every race was a bit better. I mean, you know, some of my owners thought it was a bit ambitious to go there. I just thought he trained so well and he really liked it here. It was worth it. I got a great ride from Jose Ortiz. And I thought at the quarter pole he had a chance to win the race as well. But now I was absolutely thrilled with his performance. He's another one who could be in consideration for the race in New York or a race like the Corn, which is, or the Sycamore, the mile and a half at Kinnan.
Sure. I do have, you know, nice. He's a Frankel, too. This is a gelding, so he's going to be around, Christoph. Sal Kumin and Michael Dubb and Mike Caruso and company, and this will be a fun horse. It feels like out of the pivotal mare, I mean, he's only going to be better at 5 and 6.
No, absolutely. As long as he stays on, he should have a nice career ahead of him. You know, he was an expensive horse, but well worth it. He's a gelding. And, you know, we're competing, like, in major races, so it's fun. It's a funny thing what you just said, because being by Frankel was a top-class miler. Out of a mare by Pivotal was also a top-class, you know. You would have expected him to have more speed, but that's the way it is. It's his best, you know, mile and a quarter to a mile and a half.
How many Frankels have come your way so far?
Not many. I think two. I trained the city for West Point, 14-01 last year as a two-year-old. I think it's only two. I wish I had more. By the
way. I was curious. Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love it. Chris, we got a week left. We got a week left of racing, and we haven't spoken. You've had some nice maiden winners. You really had a nice eclectic meet, and we should really catch up. Horses like Can't Hurry Love that broke the maiden the other day, and there was also the one that I kicked myself afterward on, I think, Wednesday or Thursday at the big price, that Don't Look Back at All.
Yeah, she's a filly. I'm always surprised about the price because she was a very fast filly at the sale. And I knew the filly well. I saw her in February at the farm. She was a Tokala stud. She actually belonged to a Bloodstock agent. And she worked very well early in the year at Tokala stud. They sold her, and I forgot about it when she went for the ring. And luckily enough for me, West Point bought her and sent her back to her. But she was always fast at the beginning. Very, very good-looking filly. And I thought she was impressive. I mean, she looked like the best horse of the race. She broke okay, but she had a very good race afterward. And she won pretty easily, to tell you the truth. She came back in good shape. Not exactly sure what to go next. I don't know if I keep her sprinting or if I stretch her a little bit. But I was surprised about the price because she trained well and she looked well.
Yeah, that was a missed, missed opportunity.
For the story, you could go back in the works, and she worked with Can't Hurry Love from the gate at Belmont in 49 together, like 2 weeks before the race. They both worked together and they both came back and won the race, so it's kind of nice.
Well, how do things look down the stretch here? 6 cards remaining. How many more do you have to run?
I've got probably around 10 horses to run if all these races
wow.
go. 10 or 12. City Man will run in the Bernard Baruch. You know, quite a few of these tough horses, New York bred. All this card was cancelled on the grass last Friday.
Yes.
So we have to fight. I had to scratch six horses that day, which was annoying. But City Man is doing very well. We'll run him in the Bernard Baruch. I've got Voodoo Zip running in a stakes sprinting called the Lucky Coins this coming week as well. And then we've got a few other horses running in maidens and different races. But no, we should be pretty live.
Well, I have presented the trophy for the Lucky Coin two or three years in a row. So maybe we will see you in the winner's circle for the Lucky Coin.
Yeah, that would be fun. I agree.
Christophe Clément, everybody, and Gaffaut winning the Sword Dancer for a second year in a row. And I suppose there's a chance even that we might even get a chance to retire the trophy. I don't know. Do they still do that, Chris? If you win three stakes, the same stake three times in a row, they retire the trophy?
I don't know. I'm just a trainer. I'm not an owner. But what makes me feel older is I stepped on the race like 22 or 24 years ago with Oscar on a glide, which was
yeah.
like in 1999, I think. I'm not sure. I think somewhere there.
I love it. Chris, well done, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Christophe Clément and Gaffaut for Outer Bend. And then this Soldier Rising, who's going to be around. Yeah. Four-year-old gelding that really has done, my gosh, you know, he's cashed a check in every start in North America. Actually, I take that back. He's cashed a check in every start in his career, even in Europe, where he started out kind of on the B circuit at Fontainebleau and Lyon, and then moved up a little bit to Chantilly and Longchamp. In the U.S., North American debut, and Andre Favre had him, debuted in the Saratoga Derby, the Jockey Club Derby, Hill Prince, Red Smith, etc. And then this year, as Chris said, he had a little delayed getting him going, Soldier Rising, but a couple of allowances, the Grand Couturier, where he got beat by Channelmaker and Neck, and then an allowance win earlier in the meet. So 12 career starts, 13 now, with 5 wins, 5 seconds, 2/3, and even a fifth picks up a minor check in the Hill Prince. So he's never missed a check, this horse. Soldier Rising. Hour 3 is rising. And Johnny D, for one of the great post-weekend conversations, a tradition like many others of Johnny's, including the Thanksgiving greeting, and so many more. Johnny D joins us next on his way back to Bluebell after a fabulous weekend with his man, Will Schwartz, and Drew Schwartz as well. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races. Stay with us.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing?